If you've had enough, or had near enough, you're sick and tired of that old man looking down on us. Come together, as we think we got a plan. Save a teeny tiny traveling folk band.
Hey everyone, it's Hannah Now, the host of the Flatnickel podcast. That's not the way I normally introduce these episodes, but today we have a new episode of the Flatnickel podcast. I'm sure you're very excited, and we have three episodes, three interviews in one episode. I'm great with numbers. Unfortunately, due to some time issues interviewing bands right before they go on stage, the past two episodes have sort of had to be these little clip together interviews. We've had less time with bands than we normally do, and that sucks, but it's kind of just one of those things that we've had to make do of. So we have three bands, three interviews. They're each separate interviews. It's not a bunch of people all in one room. But we have Start the Machine, Late Last Night, and Mugen Hoso. I am probably saying that wrong. The last interview is quite short. I just want to warn you. And I'm not so sure how the audio is going to be on it. But the two guys from Mugen Hoso, they are on tour from Tokyo right now, and they were honestly so sweet and so great. I had about 10 minutes with them after their show to talk to them, and I had sent them the questions ahead of time so that they could sort of prep, because they weren't really confident in their English, but they put so much effort into their answers and making sure that they could really have the most tangible response that they could offer. And it was the sweetest thing. Really, really friendly guys. I had such a great time sitting down with them. And the other bands, of course, were lots of fun to be able to sit down with and really just talk about sort of the hallmarks of local music, of DIY scenes, the frustrations that come from being an original band in an area that normally just caters to cover bands, which can be very frustrating. And I go on a little bit of a tangent about it as well. But we have three short interviews in one episode. I promise that this is the last episode like this for a little while. We're going to go back to our normal full-length interviews next week. So make sure you guys get ready for that. And without further ado, let's hop into the first interview. Recording now. Awesome. All right. So pretty much I'm just going to talk to you guys for, I'm guessing 20 minutes because that's when the show starts. We're probably going to combine all of the interviews from tonight into one because we've kind of had to make them a little bit shorter than usual. So tell me a little bit first off, for our listeners that aren't familiar with you, tell me a little bit about how long you guys have been a band, what your genre is, and sort of the general area that you play shows in.
Well, we are from Central Pennsylvania, Mount Union. We play all original rock, ska, punk. We've been playing in Pittsburgh, State College, Philadelphia, pretty much all across Pennsylvania this summer.
Have you been sort of scheduling like a not quite a tour, but over the summer, setting aside time to travel farther?
Exactly, yeah. This summer would have been our first Pittsburgh show. Philly, we're trying to branch out. So hopefully by next spring, summer, we'll be able to do an East Coast tour.
When you were reaching out to venues in Philadelphia and in Pittsburgh, how did you go about that? Because entering a new market is something that we talk about a lot on the show, sort of, I guess, tips for reaching out to venues and all that sort of stuff.
Just emailing certain clubs, send them our demo, just basically calling up the bar and telling them a little bit about ourselves and ask them if we could have a chance to play.
What are you using to find venues in those areas?
Well, social media.
Yeah,
a lot of social media. Just checking out bars, seeing what bands they have, looking for original places to play.
Have you found other bands that are similar to you that you've been able to sort of look at and see where they're playing and reach out to those venues?
Yeah, yeah. In Pittsburgh, we played with the Samurai Pizza Cats, which was a ska band. And, you know, we've been looking to see, like you said, where they're playing at. And, you know, hopefully by next year, we could schedule a, like, a small tour, just like they did.
When you were first playing shows in a different city, were you working with another band? Did the venue provide an opener for you? Did you have to find your own opener?
Well, in Philly, we had the club owner actually set up the other bands for us that were from that area. So when we went down, there was a 3-band all original, and that was very nice having, you know, them help us out instead of us trying to find all of our opening bands. And so when you get a club that does that, that's a huge help.
Have you been in a situation where the venue has asked you to provide your own openers?
Yes, we have.
And how do you go about trying to find?
Pretty much social media. Okay. Looking to see who's playing in the same type of music we are and reaching out to them and fishing.
Sometimes the bars will send you a list of people, like email you a list of bands that are kind of your genre or whatever, and, you know, say, well, this band does this, and then it's up to you to contact them.
Do you feel like having the local openers in new cities have helped you with expanding your following at all? Are you playing those shows and seeing that you're getting, you know, after you play that show, are you seeing Facebook likes come in? Are you seeing followers come in?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah. When you see your numbers sort of grow, are you seeing that mostly through after you're playing a show?
Sometimes that, and then sometimes just by networking. Chris has been working on that.
I've actually been networking a lot. I started with Facebook. Of course, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, and you can go check us out on Reverb Nation. We have 4 free downloads there. We made our own demo. But I've just recently started networking, basically reaching out to musicians, honestly, from across the world, and have found a lot of drummers, guitarists, singers, you know, engineers, DJs, and have, you know, just struck up personal conversations with them, and, you know, they have checked out our songs and our videos, and we've gotten awesome feedback so far.
When you're networking, are you trying to make sort of personal conversations with these people?
I think that's the best way.
Yeah, that's sort of how I feel. I think with networking, it can be such a it can often feel like social climby. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And so I always sort of, if you guys hear any noise in the background, or yeah, it's
I smell it.
It's Loden, for the most part. But is there anything that you sort of in particular find yourself having a conversation about when you are networking outside of just band stuff?
I mean, I'll be honest with you. I get a lot of responses. My profile picture on Facebook is me at a show we played this summer. And honestly, I get a lot of, hey, you're a girl drummer. but I have gotten like nothing but a positive response to that. And they say, you know, what band do you play in? You know, what kind of music do you guys play? And then the interest sort of grows from there.
There's a documentary that our friends made called Drive, Play, Sleep.
Yeah.
And it's interviews with a bunch of different touring musicians, and it's a little bit of the inspiration for why we started this podcast. Mm-hmm. And one of the segments in it is talking about the reactions that people have to female band members that are not vocalists.
Yes.
Do you you know, you mentioned that a lot of people responded like, oh, you're a female drummer. Is that common? Like, I forget who I spoke to that was a, I forget what she played, but all I remember was that all she knew were other women who played her same instrument. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't strange to her mm-hmm. until somebody pointed it out. Mm-hmm. Do you connect with a lot of other female musicians? Are like, what are the responses that you tend to get when you're playing shows? Like, do people not think that you're part of the band when you show up?
No, I don't think that's a problem. Just reading with this, we, so. You know, I love these guys. These guys are like my brothers, and we all sort of coordinate our wardrobes, so we look like a cohesive group.
Like, who are these people?
We walked into Sheets in Pittsburgh.
And Pitt from the Pittsburgh
And the lady said, oh, whoa, who are you guys? Why are you wearing
all
black?
Why are y'all dressed
in
black?
Why are y'all dressed in black?
It's like, well, we played a show.
Well, we're
band.
We just played a show. Yeah. That's funny. But, I mean, you know, I don't personally know very many female percussionists, and I've played since I was 11. I have gotten a handful of responses on social media from other girl drummers, but a lot of guys that are just like, you know, you're cute, that's awesome. But I mean, my style of playing is very, as one of the lead singers put it for one of the other bands that we play with in State College, aggro. So I don't want to be defined as a girl drummer.
Right.
I just want to be a good drummer. Right. And that's why I'm here. That's why I'm with these guys. Because from day one, they haven't treated me like a girl drummer.
We don't look as her as a girl.
It's not
we look
separate.
At,
she's it's
our,
just
she's our
the
drummer.
Best drummer.
She's our drummer. Yeah.
That's it.
People are surprised how hard she plays and how hard she wails by the size of her. We're just used to it.
Yeah. At first, remember, a couple of times, we were like, get it on.
Yeah.
Play the fucking thing.
How did all of you meet and decide to form a band? Was it...
Well, we've known each other since high school. And we've all done different projects. And then it's been, what, 3 years now?
3 years this June.
3 years in June, we all got together and we were just like, it's time to try this again. And we practiced for a good... solid probably 8 months before we started playing out.
Wow.
And we haven't stopped since, so it's going really good. We all get along. We love our songs. So we're keeping it going.
Marco and I have been together since we were like 14 years old. Like, this is our high school band with Krista.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Why did you guys practice for so long before you started playing out?
Well, so we can get all the original songs down, you know. It was 8 months, wasn't it?
It was probably a good 8 months. Again, you know, different standards when you're not playing covers, when you're playing original music and you're starting from, you know.
Yeah, we didn't half-ass anything.
We
wanted it right, you know.
All the material was brand new for her, too.
Yeah.
Do you run into problems where venues don't want to book you because you're not a cover band?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's so easy to book a cover band, you know. And that's our hardest thing to stay true to, is to keep doing originals and not fall into that trap of playing covers because it's easier to play out.
Do you think that there is a higher standard, that venues have a higher standard for original music than they do cover bands?
I think that we found ourselves branching out to larger areas because it is an avenue that fits our type of music mm-hmm. better. You know, we can play in smaller venues locally, more centralized to where we live, and have our friends and our family come out and support us. And they love us because, you know, we're close to them, but they kind of have to. It's like an obligation. So we really have wanted to branch out in places where our music's more popular mm-hmm. with people that we don't know mm-hmm. to get an honest reaction.
Original music isn't appreciated where we're from because it's just a small area and mm-hmm. all they want to do is hear cover songs, go out, and they don't appreciate, you know, the actual work.
Do you guys have a problem finding just venues in general in your area that can accommodate a full band? Because a lot of times I feel like in smaller towns or in more rural areas, there aren't places that, like, if you have a drum set, you're immediately disqualified because it's going to end up being too loud, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, well, when we first started, our first couple of gigs was our smaller local area venues. And it wasn't so much the space and everything, it was just the fact that, well, sometimes we had issues with space.
Let's talk about
it. Yeah, sometimes we had issues with space.
Our first show was great, but, you know, we were set up on the
floor. On the floor. So we're setting up on the floor. Not on the stage.
We were just sort of amongst people.
Okay. It's our first gig.
Was there a stage? Or was it?
Oh, there was a stage.
And you were on the floor.
Oh, yeah, they put us on the floor.
Why?
Because they're... I don't know.
Stage dogs. Yeah, well, it's kind of like the place we were playing at with the band. It was like their hometown place. Like, they play there all the time.
Yeah, they're kind of like the house band.
The house band, right. So. And they do all covers, and so they just decided to put us on the floor.
Yeah, basically.
Do you guys end up playing with cover bands very often?
Once in a while, yeah.
We try to avoid it.
Yeah, as much as possible.
But
it's kind of hard.
We try not to turn down any shows, though. Because the show is the show. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We try to play as much as we can. Sometimes we don't have a choice. We have to play with a cover band. Mm-hmm. But we prefer to play with original artists.
Right. There is a very... common disdain for cover bands on this show. Like, it is a very open thing. We talk about the fact that we don't like cover bands. We don't support the concept of cover bands. The fact that cover and tribute bands are selling out the Lurs Center in Shippensburg, which is a massive venue, is absolutely disgusting. I just want to say it and put my position out there fully and completely. The fact that people will not come out and see live music, but you can fill a 2,000-some room filled with what is essentially John Denver's funeral being played over and over again, with people playing his songs and pictures of him and videos of him being projected on stage, and that will sell out, is absolutely horrifying. We very much like the thought is very much an original live music venue.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And that's what it has been since we got involved with it. Because when you're in like a small town, rural area, it's flooded with people doing covers. Mm-hmm. Because it feels, and it is, easier. It's almost kind of a cop-out because you know you're going to get paid. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know that you're going to get gigs.
You know the people that already know the songs.
Yep. And, you know, they're gonna like you, and they're going to clap, and they're going to pay attention because they know the songs. But it lacks the soul that comes with playing music.
Absolutely.
And it's something that we really sort of dig into cover bands because it is such a frustrating thing as an original artist to have venues and big venues and good venues say, we only book cover bands.
Yes.
It
gets under my skin a lot.
Yeah.
Because the time and energy put into writing in original songs, us practicing them, and not getting, as you said, you know, the amount of people, the amount of support, just because they don't know the songs, but all those bands that they were covering are an original band. It's a cop-out. It's too easy, you know? That's how you start when you're a teenager, not when you continue all your life to be a cover band and then you just think you're awesome.
Yeah.
You're not.
It's...
Yeah.
That's just
it's,
the truth.
It's frustrating. It's frustrating.
Of course it's
frustrating.
It is. You know, I think one of the most aggravating things about being a musician is... You know, you're losing spots to people who are, you know, playing Beatles covers and probably not paying their fees for doing that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Got it.
The stuff that you guys have up on stage with you tonight. So the I want to say flags, but
our stick items.
Yes. Yeah. Why did you guys decide to have that sort of setup? Because that's not something that a lot of bands do. Yeah. I feel like it's a really smart move because anytime anybody's taking a picture, they're going to see it in the background.
It's branding.
Exactly.
It's branding. So like when we, and that's part of the reason it took like you said, like 8 months to start playing out. We wanted to go out. We pretty much had a stage idea concept, you know, after one of our practices. We'd draw out, we had the banners on there, which was the stick guy with the middle finger and, you know, grabbing his balls like F you to the world, you know. So that kind of defines us. So we're like, let's make some big banners. Let's dress the stage up on each side. And when people see that banner and that stick guy, they associate Late Last Night. So that's why we just started dressing up the stage, make it more of a show.
Right.
A spectacle, make it
a performance.
Yes. Yeah. Just not up there playing 1, 2, 3, 4, right. Let's go. And yet we're trying to make it a show to get people to come out. You got to get people off their phones, off their laptops, off their computers. And it's even harder now. So you have to do little things like that.
And it comes across as more professional too, I think. Like it.
Oh yeah.
That is exactly what we're going
for. We're going for. Yes.
Unfortunately, we aren't going to be able to talk any longer because this show is going to be starting in 2 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
But that's awesome. And that actually went really well. And we're actually at 20 minutes. So that's a perfect thing. This episode is coming out in 2 weeks, 2 Wednesdays from now. So do you guys have any plugs? Any, like, first of all, where can people find you? What's your at symbol?
Well, we're on Facebook at Late Last Night Band. We are on Instagram at Late Last Night Band PA. So if you just type those in, Late Last Night, that's NITE for night. As soon as you type it in, it'll come up with our Facebook, our Instagram. We have plenty of videos on there to see what we're all about. It'll have all of our upcoming shows. So check it out. Facebook.com/Late Last Night Band.
And then do you guys have any upcoming shows after that 2 week mark that you want
to right now we're going to do a live album.
Oh wow.
So we got that recorded up at the arena in State College a month ago. So that's going to be our next move, is to getting a live album done. And then we'll be getting to book shows for all of next year.
New music.
Oh yeah,
We're gonna spend this fall and this winter learning a lot of new music.
I got about 10 new songs over the last 3-4 months. So this winter we'll have another 20 songs, not to mention the ones that's gonna be done for the live album. So I'd say by spring, it's time for a new full album of new music that we will incorporate into our new set list.
Yeah, whenever that comes out, make sure you send it our way.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll share it. Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Hey there guys, Sam here. I'm just going to do a real quick transition. You guys just heard from Late Last Night, and now we are going to go into our interview with Start the Machine.
So essentially, I kind of just want to talk to you guys a little bit about what you've been doing, and maybe talk a little bit about the types of shows that you've been playing. And you've not been playing any shows? Is that the look on your face?
Oh, no, we've played a good bit of shows. It's, yeah.
Pretty much just, you know, talking about the local-ish scene and the people and all of that fun stuff. So just for like a precursor for our listeners who might not know you, how long have you guys been playing together, and what would you say your genre is?
So we've been around since 2010. We've known each other for a long time, but
too long.
Me and him have known each other for a long time, brother-in-laws. But these two are kind of newbies here, Seth and Enrique. We mainly play pop punk, a little bit of easy core. So nothing too heavy, but enough to kind of, you know, get you going.
When you guys are playing shows, what's the sort of general vicinity that you're playing? And have you played The Shack?
The Shack?
In West Virginia.
I've heard of that place.
Okay.
I'm not familiar with it.
Anytime I talk with bands like this, I'm like, but have you played The Shack? I know nothing about it. I just know that it's like a DIY venue in West Virginia. I suddenly have a tip on where. It's like, it's pretty much if you go towards Martinsburg and then go either east if the pen doesn't work, east or west, it's somewhere. It's like maybe less than an hour. When you guys are playing shows, sort of what's the vicinity that you're playing in?
A lot of times we mainly like we try to stay like local. Like we played the Ring Room down in Greencastle a few times. We played at the Champ a few times. More than a few times. They actually just had their last show last night. Is their closing? So
is that what is that? I'm not
the Champ. It's a venue in Warren. It's been open for like, what was it, like 15 years?
20, I think.
So it was open for a ridiculous amount of time. It was down there off Market Street. A lot of big bands got to start there, like August Burns Red would start out there.
Ice Nine Kills
came through a lot. And Miss May, they got there big there.
Would you guys consider yourselves a part of like the DIY scene? Are you playing a lot of like basement shows? And
yeah, I do a lot of those.
Yeah.
We do a lot of, fundraising stuff, too.
Benefit shows. I love benefit shows.
What kind, like?
We did one last year. It was a Halloween show up in Mount Holly. It was for autism. Yeah, awareness. And then we did one at Galifty's last year as well. It was for someone that passed away. I think it was one of the workers' husband or something like that. And they were trying to raise money up. So we did that.
When you guys are playing benefit shows, is it sort of a different crowd than like when you're playing other gigs?
Yeah, the age group, and then like the certain types of people that show up, like the people that show up to our benefit shows and stuff like that aren't the same people that usually go to the Champ or other bigger kind of venues that we've played.
But and the other thing that's nice too, like the benefit shows and stuff, is like you might have like a rock and roll cover band, then you might have like a pop punk band like us, then you might have a metal band, and it's just a bunch of different kind of bands, and just opens up like a wide variety for music for people to check out.
Do you feel like that's been a good opportunity to sort of expand your following, because you are interacting with people that you probably wouldn't normally interact with at your shows?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely. Just around South Central PA, like, I've noticed the punk scene, or I guess alternative rock scene, whatever you want to call it, it's kind of gone to crap here. It's really just a bunch of, like, deathcore, metalcore stuff, so, like, it's kind of nice to play shows with, like, other bands. Like, when we played at Galifty's, you know, we played with Acoustic Acts and stuff like that. And, like you said, cover bands and stuff. So that's kind of nice.
That bar that we did was nice. That was nice.
The biker bar?
Yeah. That was fun.
that was
different, but it was fun.
It was interesting.
What's the strangest venue that you've played at? Because you just mentioned the biker bar. I don't think I've ever spoken to anyone that... I know that biker bars have live music, but I don't think I've ever met anyone that's played at a biker bar.
We survived.
I think that was the weirdest one, to be honest. Because that was when we were all... It was before the other two members joined. But it was different. Like, they were like hair metal... I mean, they were like hair metal band kind of things. Yeah. They did covers of older songs, and we were the only pop punk band that was there, you know.
We were the only band not doing covers. Everyone else is doing like Aerosmith covers and AC/DC and we didn't have any covers except for Brain Stew. Because that was a last-minute decision.
Yeah. How did you get booked for that show? Did they reach out to you? Were you looking for shows? And
Actually, our one guitarist who just kind of fell off the face of the earth, his dad had contacts because his dad, he plays in cover bands. And I guess they had a band drop out, and they were like, oh, you guys want to play this show? And we were like, hell yeah, sure, you know, we'll play.
When you're normally booking shows, what are you looking for? Are you having places that are reaching out to you? Are you reaching out and are you doing the whole booking email thing?
A little bit of both.
Yeah, we've had places email us and get in contact like, hey, you know, we're putting together a show at whatever place, you know, do you want to play? Sure. And then we've also emailed places about playing a show, trying to put something together.
With benefit shows, are they normally reaching out to you?
Yeah. Usually it's, I'm guessing it's either we get contact from like somebody else that knows somebody, that's usually how it goes. Or if on a certain Facebook page, there's a bunch of music groups, people will post, hey, you know, we're trying to book bands for this.
You know, I've never sort of dived into discussing the local music scene Facebook groups. Is that something that, like, I'm not on Facebook, so I don't know the answer to any of these questions, but, like, is that something that is there the same bullshitty drama that is on other Facebook page? Is everybody relatively respectful?
Not really. Yeah, everyone's pretty respectful for the most part. I mean, once in a while you'll get someone who just tries to post something just to, you know, shake everybody up. But I think for the most part, because it's labeled a 717 club, so it's usually just everyone in this area. Mm-hmm. So everybody kind of knows each other. And even if I don't know this person, I know somebody else that they know because, you know, they played in bands. So for the most part, you know, it's a small world. Everybody knows everyone. It's not that big of a deal.
Has it been good as far as, like, networking? And have you been able to find other bands to play with?
Oh, yeah.
That sort of thing?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
When you guys book shows, do you ever have venues ask you to find your own openers or, like, build your own bill?
Years and years ago, we headlined for a show at Galifty's. And they wanted us to find a couple bands, and we had two bands that were like, yeah, sure, and then one showed up, so that was great. That was great.
Do you come into problems like that a lot where bands fail last minute? Because as a booker, I've only occasionally had a band fall through. In 5 years, I think maybe I've had two, and one was somebody was scamming me. So is that something that you guys see a lot of? Like, I predominantly work in, like, folk Americana and, like, indie rock. So with your guys' genre, do you guys see a lot of that sort of thing?
It's not really just with the genre. Are you just saying, like, all people just flaking out at shows and stuff?
Yeah, like, or, you know, because I, you see all, like, the memes about, you know what I mean?
Faceless.
So, yeah. You know, about, you know,
yeah,
members not showing up. And
it's not really about genre. It's just either, you know, car breaks down or something like that, or, you know, they can't make it or something comes up. We had to bail out on a couple shows just because of band member problems, people just not showing up or whatever. I mean, it happens.
Our last show, the headliner dropped, and then the dude that booked the show said he literally flipped a coin between us and another band, and somehow we won and we ended up headlining, which is really cool.
Yeah.
As far as other bands that you've played with, are there certain ones that you've played with, like, more consistently? Do you find yourselves on bills with similar bands, like, the same bands?
We've been trying to, like, expand and find other bands, but, more recently we've been playing with, like,
Home Sweet Home
a lot.
RIP.
Yeah, they're no longer a band at this point because they all split apart and decided to do their own thing, which is cool.
They're adults now. They're grown-ups. They got married and stuff now.
Yeah, Sam got married.
finding other bands isn't necessarily hard, but finding other bands that actually want to do shows is a little more hard than finding bands.
What's really difficult, and everyone has their opinion on it, is the whole pay-to-play thing with, like, selling tickets. Mm-hmm. Personally, I hate it, but, I mean, you look at it from a business point of view, so it kind of makes sense, but, I mean, I love playing places where they don't tell you to sell tickets, you know, this place or whatever, you know, it's just, I'll show up and bring a crowd, right. Oh, you know, because I can do that.
The only time that I've ever, because I'm very much pay to play, that's hard to say, which I've actually found is really prevalent in Baltimore. Baltimore, like so many venues, are pay to play. The only time that I've ever suggested somebody do that, or I've required them and I told them they were being dropped from the bill, was that they booked a show with the same headliner 30 minutes away the day before our show. And I was like, listen, like, you're going to have to sell tickets. Otherwise, this isn't going to work out, because there's no way that people are going to go see the same show two nights in a row when you booked with us first. Like, I'm not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like pay to play is more like a DIY thing,
mm-hmm.
than anything. Like, I've never really encountered that. Do you think it sort of discourages, bands from working with those venues? And do you think it's discouraging at all, like as a band in general, that there are so many pay to play venues?
It really depends on the status of the band. I mean, we've played at the Champ numerous times, and there have been some occasions where we're able to sell all the tickets. I mean, it's not, you know, it's what, 20 tickets, so it's not too much, but then once again, it's, you know, everyone has different schedules, you know, at my work, you know, we were all in the same schedule, then they split up everybody's schedule, so, you know, people were working, you know, Sunday to Wednesday, and then, like, all my friends, of course, went Wednesday to Saturday, and mm-hmm. nobody, you know, so that blew everything out of the water. But I mean, if you're a pretty big band around here, it's not a problem, but for some of these bands that just kind of start up, you know, it's kind of a problem.
And the unfortunate part too is, like, I know this, I'm not sure this happens with all pay to play places, but the Champ, if you didn't sell a ticket, either you paid for tickets that were never going to get used, or you didn't get to play.
When you have to sell tickets, how do you sort of go about that?
I call everyone on my Facebook Messenger.
Yeah, normally for me, I just message, like, family and friends first. Hey, I got a show this day, blah, 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 blah. You know, do you want to go? Usually I get the, I'll let you know here in a couple days. And then that couple days is never. But then usually our Facebook page or, Messenger or whatever.
I use everything I can. I promote the show on my Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, you know. I'm sure if I had a Pornhub account, I'd put it on there too. I'm sure I'd get a lot of views on that one. Everyone would see that one.
That's hilarious. Yes. When,
thinking about it now.
Just sort of finding random videos.
I just thrown off of, like, trying to think of what to ask next now, because that just...
Find some sort of machine.
That's gonna be the clip that we put on Instagram to promote the show. That's gonna be the audio.
Do like, it!
Wow.
Digging our dreams.
Next thing you know, our music will be on Pornhub too for download.
Just call next videos.
The next big thing. The next big streaming service for music is. You know, I wonder when there. Sam, you might want to edit this out. I wonder when there is music in the background of porn, like
all the time.
Are there bands that, like, the same way you're licensing music to commercials, that are licensing their music to porn accounts? Like, are those bands being paid whatever, you know, 5 cents?
We should do that.
You know, I know the guy from the what band was it? Presidents of the United States of America, those guys, when they split up, I don't know if they're back together or whatever, but the one guy, he was making music for porn. I guess it was just like weird instrumental stuff, of course, but like
I feel like that's something that I want to like I want to interview somebody that's job is to score.
I have no shame in saying this. I was like 16 and I it was some porn site, I don't know, but it was like some, it said metalhead chick rides dude, and I'm like, okay, whatever. So I clicked on it, and they had The Light of My Face on by Carnifex blaring in the background, and it's like, I wasn't even watching porn, I was just like sitting there like headbanging.
But like, are people getting paid for that? That's the real, like, that's the new controversy.
That'd be cool.
Surrounding pornography, is our band getting paid?
Yeah, I can't even play this show anymore, I'm just gonna go home.
I opened up a whole can of worms, didn't I?
You're done for. I had so many more questions, and now I just feel like I've been totally thrown off.
Sorry.
No, it's totally fine. It was a funny bit, so I'm down with it.
Ruining podcasts since you started.
We were talking about pay to play. Do you feel like you're seeing less of those venues now? Less of pay to play?
The only real pay-to-play venues I know, unless you guys can chip in and know, that's in, like, the South Central PA area without going, like, Philly and all them places, was the Champ and Chameleon Club. As far as I know...
Is the Chameleon pay-to-play?
I'm pretty sure it is. I've had a lot of friends play there, and they said it... What was it for launch a few years ago? It was Whitechapel and Carnifex. I think they had to sell, like, 60 to 80 tickets.
Wow.
Reverb, but well, that's in Reading.
So yeah, that's right. Reverb, the
same area.
We'll count it.
Are you guys traveling that far for shows? Like, have you played Reading? Have you played? No.
My car hates long distances, and every time I just ran about this on Facebook literally like 2 days ago, because every time I go to Walmart for an oil change, something goes wrong with my car, and this time it was the brakes.
You know, I think that it's kind of. Getting your oil changed is a little bit of a scam, because every time you go to get your oil changed, there is something wrong with your car. Mm-hmm. And it's everybody. It's absolutely everybody.
Oh, I thought it was just me.
It's
you get friends to do it.
Yep, it's something, and then whatever it is, it's absolutely urgent that it gets fixed.
Don't forget this.
It's not a casting couch.
Not yet.
This is normal for us.
It's a great couch, though. As far as like the DIY venues and stuff, or like basement shows, you said you've played a couple of those. When is that another situation where whoever's hosting the show is reaching out to you, or are you hearing about it sort of through the tunnels and reaching out to them and being like, hey, I want to play this venue?
Normally, from what I've experienced, it's people reaching out, just like on Facebook. We've played a couple shows at this place in Greencastle called the Breathing Room, and we're friends with the guy that does it. So either he'll just message us, you know, hey, we're looking for, you know, a band to play this show, you want to hop on, you know, or if I message him, just, you have any shows coming up. So it's kind of both ways.
Do you feel like there's a benefit to playing house shows and like basement shows versus... Oh, great. This sounds like a topic.
I love basement shows. I love house shows because it's always hot and sweaty, and it's a small room, so, you know, nobody's standing in the back of the room because it's like there is no back of the room.
And there's pillars you can slam people into.
Oh, yeah, that show. I like it because it's easier to interact. We play shows at the Champ and stuff like that. And, you know, you get your few friends that are just, like, right there on, you know, by the stage, and they're chilling with you, you know, while you're jamming. But then you always get, like, the people that just are there for the other bands, and they're, like, way in the back. And it's, you know, you say, oh, yeah, it's, you know, move up, and they're just like...
Nobody moves up.
You know, when I go to shows, I either stand, like, right up by the stage or kind of in the middle, depending on, you know, how I'm feeling, if I'm feeling the band or not. But I've always hated when people just, like, stand in the back on their phones and stuff. I actually went to a show. My brother was playing a show, and he was, you know, singing or whatever, and this guy was, like, right in front of him on his cell phone, like, texting. And Paul, I don't want to say his name, but he went down, and he's just like, oh, get off your phone here, I'm playing a show for you. And he grabbed the guy's phone, like, you know, I flipped it over or whatever. And I was just like, I can respect that, you know? Like, I'm in front of the guy.
Is it weird when you are playing really tight spaces when you have to look at somebody and, like, you know, are you making uncomfortable eye contact with
all we do is play in tight spaces, okay?
Because my greatest fear, and I've only ever been called out on it once, is when I go to shows and I know that somebody's watching me. And when I saw Matt Wright play in the suit, it was in a barn. It was the tiniest little room ever. And this was like a quiet acoustic show, like nobody was talking, and I was just chilling there, and we kept making eye contact over his piano, and it made me very uncomfortable because I don't like knowing that people can see me.
I don't wear my glasses when we play, so, and I'm blind as a bat, so I mean, it works for me. Hold on, this is telemarketer, gotta reject, keep calling me. But I mean, I try to make people uncomfortable. I think I did that in the living room. This one kid, I was screaming in his face, and my mom saw the video. She's like, "Why'd you have him out of the chair?" I said, "I didn't." She's like, "But in the video," I said, "No, mom, I had him by his throat, and I was screaming in his face."
I think it's kind of your like job as a musician to make creepy eye contact with people.
At some point.
At some point. Well, not like that, but I mean, like, because like, you're doing your thing, and you know, sometimes when you're just kind of looking down at what you're playing, or you know, not looking at the crowd, then it just seems like
you're not into it.
Yeah, you're not into it. You gotta kind of look up and smile. I mean, you know, but you don't want to do that creepy smile like, "Hey," just you know, nod away, whatever. But I've always liked it when artists make eye contact with me. I think. Yeah, I went to see Blink-182 a couple of years ago.
Oh, you screamed.
Oh, don't worry about it. I was 20 feet from the stage, and Mark Hoppus, eye contact, and oh my goodness. I was like, he noticed me. I'm alive.
His soul still hasn't returned to his body yet. Oh my goodness.
But, I mean, like I said, I think it's just kind of your duty just to kind of, you know, let the crowd know, hey, you know.
I've been to a lot of, like, band shows. Like a lot.
Like two.
Yeah, like two and a half, something like that. But,
two and a half.
I've noticed that, like, bands just kind of start out a little rocky, you know? Some of them don't, like, engage the crowd or don't do much. They kind of just stand on stage, play their songs, and then leave. But, like, I've noticed, like, most bands that do really well are bands that engage the crowd. Like, I've seen like Attila and like Miss May I and a bunch of huge, huge bands, and they're like, they're standing up on the stage, and they're like getting everyone involved. They're like screaming at people, like pointing people out, you know? And I think it's at that point, it's one of those things that has to be done, but like to a certain point. So you don't want to just stand there and stare at one person the entire song and not lose eye contact at all. You kind of just want to engage everyone, but you always have those moments where there's one person that you, like, make eye contact with, and it's kind of weird, so you break it off, and then you come back later. It just happens.
Okay, I think that's actually probably a good place to end on. That's it. That's a good ending note.
Win.
Okay, guys, that was our interview with Start the Machine, and now our quick little interview with Muchen Hoso.
I sent you the questions in advance. Yeah. So we'll run through those really quickly, and then we're gonna add this to another episode. So how is the music scene different in Japan from the US?
Yep. First of all, I'm not familiar with US music scene.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, in J-pop scene in Japan, is tie-in with TV commercial and anime song.
Mm-hmm.
But Japan independent music scene is, I think, like us, is as same as US, such as using Facebook and a website to split a show and a tour. DIY. Yeah.
What inspired you to decide to tour in the US?
We tour once a year. And when we start playing together, there was Japanese friend who moved to New York alone to play just himself. His music was so great, especially after moving to United States. And we toured in Taiwan abroad first time. We played local venues and American bar. It was better for us to play American bar to get some money or to enjoy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we decided to try to go United States.
How many times have you toured in the U.S.?
Eight times.
Eight times.
Yes.
Are you full-time musicians?
Yes, I'm. Taro. Taro is... No. Hiro is a full-time musician. Mm-hmm. I have a job.
What is the craziest thing that has happened during a show?
Hiro plays crazily his guitar. You saw our show, right? Yeah. And when he plays... sometimes his guitar strap is cut, so due to hard moving, like this. And in U.S. tour, I forgot the place. His strap was cut, and he didn't have a driver screwdriver. So he asked, "Is there someone has it?" But no answer, nothing. So after that, someone took out his knife to drill. Whoa! And then the other one seemed to take out his gun. Hey, calm down. I can't believe it. Yeah.
Dangerous.
Yeah, that's America. Right? Yeah.
What is your favorite part about touring and playing shows?
For me, Taro. I can live a routine life in Japan to come here. And I can refresh my thinking and my mind. And I'm happy to play a show. The audience looks so fun when we play crazily. So it's not different about it in Japan and the United States.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, guys, that does it for this interview. Thanks so much for tuning in. Be sure to tune in again next week. We post every single Wednesday. We are available on iTunes, Podomatic, and Google Play Podcasts. You can follow us on Instagram at The Flat Nickel Podcast. Follow us on Facebook at The Flat Nickel Podcast. Make sure to drop us a like, a favorite, a subscribe, a five-star review wherever you're listening, and we will be sure to get another episode out to you guys next week.